Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I wanted to convey to my audience that I'm not just about only evidence-based things. There's other things that I'm interested in, like spirituality, and even just some personal development things that may not necessarily have been studied formally yet. And that's why I decided to open up my brand to include other topics, including spirituality and personal development, because they're important to me, because I started to feel a little bit confined and restricted as, quote, veggie doctor.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hey humans, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of I Am Human. Thank you also for subscribing to my show, reviewing it, and sharing it with others. To be human means embracing the flexibility to evolve, grow, and let go of paths that no longer serve you. And today, I'm sharing with you something a bit different. Recently, I had the pleasure of being a guest on the Mics to Millions podcast hosted by Sam Brait-Ghia. This episode is all about the behind the scenes of podcasting and the rebranding behind I Am Human. Rebranding has offered me a sense of freedom, allowing me to explore fresh topics, especially topics I felt a bit restricted by the chosen niche of Veggie Doctor Radio. I am so grateful for all the support you have all given me during these past 7 years, and also to my team here at the podcast. And to all my returning and new listeners, thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Sam Brait-Ghia on Mics to Millions. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional.
My guest today is the host of I Am Human, a podcast that shares rich conversations on plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine, personal development, and spirituality. It strives to share valuable insights to promote health, well-being, longevity, and joy so you can craft your best life yet. The show receives roughly 13,000 monthly downloads, and it's been running since September 2017. She's a board-certified pediatrician, certified lifestyle medicine physician, national board-certified health and wellness coach, author, and an international speaker. Dr. Yami Cazorla-Lancaster, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today, Sam. It's my pleasure to be here.
Please, the pleasure is all mine. I'm really glad you're here. And I have to ask you the question I always ask all of my guests to start with. What do you consider to be your greatest success in podcasting?
Consistency and longevity. I feel like there's so many new podcasts now, but most people just aren't prepared to stick with it and change and adapt with their lifestyle. So I'm just proud that we're almost 7 years in.
Yeah, that is no small feat. Like with all the things that you have to do to keep a podcast running, the fact that 7 years in and you're still here, and thriving as well, may I add. That's a fantastic achievement. So yeah, definitely be proud of that. And with regards to I Am Human, how did it all begin?
Well, I actually started on YouTube because I wanted to have some platform to start sharing my passion and my knowledge about plant-based nutrition and healthy living, primarily from the perspective of a pediatrician to begin with. But what happened with YouTube when I started doing YouTube back in the day is that my mother kept texting me, telling me that I needed to change my outfits because each video, you know, you have to put the videos and you have the same clothes on and makeup and all that. And so it just started becoming a little bit more cumbersome. And I, at the time, found some podcasts that I was listening to. And I thought, well, maybe it's just easier to podcast. That way I don't have to worry about hair and makeup and outfit changes and all that stuff. Ironically, now I do both the video podcast and the audio podcast. But that's how I changed over to podcasting as my primary platform to just disseminate knowledge and passion and everything that I've learned so that other people could learn it as well.
That's really cool. It's interesting that you went from like YouTube to podcasting. A lot of time we find that it goes the other way around. What was the biggest shift that you had to make when you went from YouTube to podcasting? And when you started in podcasting, were you still uploading the episodes to your YouTube channel without video?
No, that actually came later. I stopped doing YouTube for the most part when I started my podcast. We would put some videos here and there, but it wasn't as regular. At the beginning, when I started my podcast, I was doing everything myself. So I think the biggest hurdle was just learning how to edit audio because I didn't know how to do that. And so that was a big learning curve for me. And I'm sure I haven't gone back to listen to my initial episodes, but I'm pretty sure they sound horrible because I didn't know anything about improving sound quality. Where I was recording was super echoey. I was really bad at editing, and videos were just so much easier because you can see it and, you know, it was just different. And my husband was helping me edit the videos as well. So I think that was the biggest thing is just the technical aspects.
And how did that transition? So you obviously mentioned in the beginning, you started the editing process. Over time, did you outsource that out and did you outsource other tasks out?
Yes, absolutely. I feel so privileged now, like I'm super spoiled. Basically, all I have to do now is come up with my questions and record the episode, and the rest is completely handled for me. And so it's so smooth and seamless and beautiful and lovely. But started out with one of my employees, so my office manager. I own my own private practice as a pediatrician, and I started out with that also solo. So when I first started my own practice, I had zero employees. I was doing everything myself. And so once I hired my first employee, I still didn't have a ton of patients. And so I asked her, and she already was kind of tech savvy and is very creative, would you mind learning how to edit these and doing these for me? And so she slowly started taking over more tasks over time. And now we pretty much have it down to a science. It's a machine. And we even outsourced the editing part to another company so that she can help me with all of the scheduling and all of the logistics of just booking guests and all of that.
That's really cool. We often find that people outsource the editing process, but usually I think that they find like an individual is it's quite common. But you said that you outsourced it to an editing company. How did you find this company and what made you go with them?
Well, what happened is I think part of it is just because we are so obsessed with quality and sound quality. So Alejandra, who does all my stuff, it was just getting to the point where she was spending so much time editing. And then we started doing video too. So she was editing the audio, she was editing the video, and it was just taking a lot of her time to edit. And I just needed her time to be used on other things related to my practice and related to other revenue generating activities for this more side hustle stuff. And so we just started looking and just did a web searched for different companies that did podcast editing and got information and started making phone calls. And we just settled on a company that we felt was a reasonable price for what we needed because they do both audio and video editing. And some of the other things related, like they'll upload it and all of that stuff too. So for us, it's working right now. In the future, it may change again, but this is what we have decided for now that is the best use of everybody's time.
And with regards to the progression of the podcast, what did the first year of podcasting look like for you from September 2017 to the following year in 2018?
Well, I've always had some sort of consistency. It just hasn't been the same tempo the whole time. So I started out that I just wanted to do one a month. And then it was just like one every other week, then one a week, then back to one a month. And so it kind of just jumped around a little bit at the beginning, but I was regular. And then when we realized it was growing and doing well, that's when we committed to like, okay, we're going to have a podcast episode every single week. And at that point, it was way easier for me to get guests. So that wasn't a problem. And then when the pandemic hit, I had more free time. And so we decided to do two episodes a week for several months. And that was good for downloads, but it was really difficult to keep up, you know? And so then we went back to one a week and now we're one a week. And occasionally we'll release a bonus episode here and there. But for the most part, the one episode a week has been our mainstay. That's been the most regular flow. And I would say at the beginning, what I struggled with the most was just coming up with a good workflow and staying organized and getting ahead so that it wasn't last minute. Although I will say that there's been several times in my podcast journey where we've lost our lead, you know? And so I love to have at least 6 weeks of content already recorded so that if I go on vacation or something, I'm not stressed. But we've definitely had periods of time, even as veteran podcasters, where we've lost that and been in that treadmill again of like, oh, I got to get another episode done this week, you know? So as much as I can, I try to stay out of that stress, but it happens.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes life gets in the way and yeah, things trip you up. I completely get that. And when you went from two episodes a week down to one episode a week again, did that have any impact on your downloads?
Yeah, for sure. It went back down again just because it was less volume, you know, so it's just a numbers game. But overall, over time, my downloads have gone up just because I'm getting more people that are subscribing to my channel over time. So compared to that point, I have more downloads now. But at the time when we went back down to one episode a week, it did have a little drop.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's to be expected. I thought that might be the case. But I mean, at the end of the day, consistency and sustainability is the primary goal. Because I mean, if you're going to have two episodes a week, but be burnt out within a couple of weeks, then yeah, there's absolutely no point. Not worth it. But do you remember when and how you reached your first 10K listeners overall and how long it took?
You know what? I don't.
That's okay.
I'm not good. I'm so bad at remembering numbers. I feel like it might have taken a couple of years at least to get there. You know, at the beginning, it's always so slow. And then it's almost like you get this exponential growth.
It's like a snowball effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. That's cool. And with regards to like promoting the podcast, what are some of the most successful steps that you found to promote I Am Human?
Well, we primarily just use social media and post on Instagram and then through Instagram onto Facebook. And I think that that's been working well for us. And I think that one thing that's really great is just word of mouth and people spreading the podcast to their friends and their family. What I think is really funny is that there's still a lot of people that have never listened to a podcast. So for us podcasters, it feels like it's so saturated and it feels like, you know, there's so many podcasts, but the truth is that the majority of people have probably never listened to a podcast. And so I feel like I actually have two separate lives because I also own my own practice. It's a thriving practice. I have lots of patients. And I would say the majority of them have never listened to my podcast. I recommend it quite a bit because I have so many episodes that apply to pediatrics and lifestyle medicine that would help families. And so I do recommend it. And I think when I specifically tell them, hey, listen to this episode because it's going to help you with this issue, a lot of them probably do. But whenever we've done surveys to ask them, do you even know that Dr. Yami has a podcast? The majority of people are like, no, what's a podcast? So I think for us podcasters, it's just important to remember that we still have to be talking about it and telling people about it and even walking them through it step by step. Like, okay, what kind of phone do you have? There's this podcast player on there. You just click that and then you can search or go to Spotify and search there, you know, because a lot of people have never even tried to listen to a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be hard to convert them because sometimes, yeah, when you're not in the world of podcasting, it can seem tricky. Yeah, I get that. And you said that social media is one of your main avenues of marketing the show or promoting the show. Like, what is your approach with regards to social media? Like, how often do you post and what kind of posts do you use to promote the show and repurpose your content?
So we post for every single episode, probably 2 or 3 times for each episode. And we do static posts and we do little audio clips of the show and audio and video clips of each episode, because now that I record video as well, that really helps. And we also throw those on YouTube as well, YouTube shorts. And now it's just so easy, even for older episodes, to go back and take out little clips and just continue to promote even older episodes that we feel are just evergreen and spread those on Reels and YouTube shorts. And I think that has the best traction because so many people like to be on watching videos instead of the static images now, but probably just 2 or 3 times a week. It's something that right now we're not hitting too hard because I have so many different things that we have to focus on in my practice and my business right now. But I think that just sticking to that minimum has been good. And then in the future, when we're ready to grow the podcast a little bit harder, then probably posting every single day and having very specific types of posts that we use to target our audience.
Mm-hmm. So you also mentioned word of mouth being a really strong kind of marketing channel for you folks. Is there anything you've done or that you do to encourage word of mouth promotion?
Well, I do tell people each episode when I record my intro to share episodes. But I think also it just has to do with the kind of audience you have. I don't know why. A lot of people will tell me, oh, I heard about your episode through my friend who told me about, or heard about your podcast through my friend who told me about this one episode. And so I think that's very powerful because right now time is so valuable to everybody. And there's so many different things that are fighting and competing for our attention that if somebody says, listen to this, you're really going to like it, or it's really going to help you, they're more likely to actually listen to it because they trust that person rather than just it randomly popping up. You know, I just think it just has to do with time and value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I also wanted to say, I know you previously delivered a TEDx talk and it's been very successful. It's racked up over 100,000 views on YouTube and I really enjoyed it. I loved how you brought up your childhood stories from your family farm. And I'm going to add a link to the show notes so people can check that out. But have you found that presenting a TEDx talk has helped boost your profile or had an impact on your podcast in any way?
Well, actually, I was surprised to hear that it's over 100,000 because I think the last time I checked, it was like 14K. So I'm surprised about that. I don't know. I feel like most people don't know that I've done a TEDx talk. So I'm going to guess that it probably hasn't. I know a lot of people always talk about that. Like they're like, oh, you do a TED talk. And, you know, TEDx is obviously smaller and a little bit different, more local. And it's just going to blow up everything. And I did not find that to be the case. I am so grateful that I did one because it was amazing. And being a speaker and performer, I mean, having that red dot and the audience was just like, oh, it was so great. So I'm so glad I did it, but it did not produce the effect that I was hoping it would. So that's just me being honest from my perspective. And it might just be that my topic is so niche and for such a small audience that maybe that's the reason.
Yeah, well, I'm I have to say, thanks for your honesty. I personally believe that TEDx is like, it's kind of a nice sort of thing to have on your profile, I guess, in the sense that obviously here at PodWritten, we focus on podcast pitching and getting our clients booked on podcasts. And I think it's always really helpful whenever there's a frame of reference or there's some kind of like social credibility that the person receiving the pitch or the information can kind of like recognize. So that's why stuff like, I don't know, like being featured in the New York Times or the Forbes or Entrepreneur, these are all publications that people are aware of. So they carry more credibility because they're well known. And I think TEDx is among that. Like you said, it's somewhat smaller than the larger TED events. But I definitely think that like, certainly if you're presenting yourself or pitching yourself, there's some credibility there. And if someone is listening and they think, you know what, I would like to try and get myself on stage at a TEDx talk. You obviously really enjoyed it. So it sounds like it could be a fun experience. What advice would you give to anyone listening who wants to give a TEDx talk?
Well, I think that a lot of people probably don't realize that it's a lot more strict than you think. There's a lot of rules associated with these talks, and they have to read your whole script. And a lot of times they will edit things out. And even after all that, like we spent 6 weeks going back and forth, editing the talk and making sure that everything met the criteria. Even after that, they ended up sticking a disclaimer on mine, which I think was kind of upsetting to me because I did follow all the criteria. So it is pretty strict. It honestly, I do consider it a big deal. I would just say that do it because you want to do it and because you love that sort of thing, not because you think it's instantly going to make you, you know, blow up, you know, because it may not, because there's just so many people doing them now, but it is a very serious thing. Like you can't just come up with whatever old talk and do it. Like it has to meet certain criteria and has to be evidence-based and all of these kinds of things. So I would highly recommend it for people that love public speaking and want to challenge themselves and want to present valuable information. I definitely recommend it for sure.
Yeah, I can see the benefits. And it's really nice to have this insider opinion because I don't think there's a guest, or at least if I've had a guest on before, we haven't discussed their TEDx work. So it's really nice to have this on the show. And previously, we did obviously mention that like having the listener's time is so valuable with so much other content out there in the world. And obviously, the health and wellness space is huge with tons of podcasts. How do you differentiate your podcast specifically from the others in the health and wellness space?
Well, one thing I should probably let your listeners know is that I recently did have a bit of a rebranding in January of this year, so just a few months ago, because I started out my podcast as Veggie Doctor Radio. And that's what it has been for the majority of the time. And my focus has always been plant-based nutrition and lifestyle medicine, but I started feeling after a while that I wanted to talk about other things that were important to me too. One of the things I love about podcasting is I feel like it's my platform, it's mine, and I can talk about whatever I want. And I think for us people that are podcasters at heart and we just love doing this, it's a space for us almost to just explore our interests and our passions and to learn new things ourselves. Like I feel like one of the reasons I love it so much is because I learn so much from my guests and I really enjoy that. It's what keeps me going every day. And one of the comments I started seeing, not a ton, because obviously my listeners are just like so nice and they're so kind, both on social media and on my podcast. But I started seeing like things like, oh, this topic isn't evidence-based. Why are you talking about this? And I wanted to convey to my audience that I'm not just about only evidence-based things. There's other things that I'm interested in, like spirituality, and even just some personal development things that may not necessarily have been studied formally yet. And that's why I decided to open up my brand to include other topics, including spirituality and personal development, because they're important to me, because I started to feel a little bit confined and restricted as quote veggie doctor, you know, the veggie doctor. I'm not just going to talk about eating plants, although that's my favorite topic. I want to also talk about some other things. And so that's why I did that rebranding. And I feel like it has made it feel more relaxed and open for me. And it's been, you know, the rebrand has been well received as well. I haven't lost any followers or downloads or any. It's only gone up since then. So I'm really grateful for that. But I feel like, you know, for each person, what's really important is do it because you want to do it. Just like I said for the TEDx talk, do it because something calls you to do it, because you're passionate about it, because you enjoy it. And it'll evolve and it'll develop, and you'll be able to create an audience that listens to you, for what you have to say and how you host the podcast. And that's what I've felt over time with my podcast as well. Even though there's like 50 million podcasts on health and personal development and spirituality, I still have my own little section of listeners that really love my podcast. And I think that's the most important thing to me.
Yeah. And it's clear that this is something you're so passionate about. And that's really a congratulations on the successful rebrand.
I am so happy that it's almost summer. It may seem like you're going to have lots of extra time to be lazy and spend lots of time in the kitchen, but let's face reality. Summer brings lots of traveling and spontaneous activities, and you don't want to be stuck planning meals, shopping for groceries, or laboring over a hot stove. Make life easy, like summertime, and try out Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited process ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Listen, you don't want to get home from your trip to an empty fridge and nothing to cook. You're tired, you're jet-lagged. The last thing you want to do is go to the grocery store. Green Chef is your summer lifestyle lifesaver. You can even take Green Chef meal kits with you to your vacation rental. Easy peasy. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited process ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. You get to choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options that allow you to take back time in your kitchen and have dinner ready within 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Here's the best part. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, as well as some produce that come already pre-chopped, and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are very simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. What I love most about Green Chef is that it takes the stress out of cooking. The recipes are easy to follow and everything you need is included. So even less experienced cooks in your house can prepare a delicious home-cooked meal. We have loved using Green Chef in our household, and it's perfect for any season, especially if you want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. Don't let the summer vacation schedule throw you off your healthy eating lifestyle. Make it easy to stick to your healthy eating goals with Green Chef. Go to greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use the code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
It's summertime, which means more traveling, beach days, and a shift in our daily routines. It might mean you also get thrown off of your usual healthy habits. Well, having a green powder available that you can pack with you on road trips or overseas adventures can help you stay on track. That's where the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens comes in. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with products intended to bring your mind and body back in harmony. They consider themselves a by women and for women company. They now offer a nutrient-dense green Nutri-Green powder called Daily Nutri-Greens. The Daily Nutri-Greens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. It also contains other important nutrients such as B12, iron, zinc, and selenium. The Daily Greens are certified organic, and all you have to do is mix with water, but you can also easily add to your smoothies, your oatmeal, or even baked goods. The Daily Nutri-Greens are vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. Another bonus is that the packaging is compostable. Yay! The Apple Banana Daily Nutri-Greens has a pleasant and mild flavor. It's easy to prepare and drink and doesn't leave any gritty aftertaste. When I drink it, I feel great afterward. It's really easy to create a daily ritual around your green drink, integrated into your daily self-care routine. A green powder is one way to fill the gap in your daily nutrition and is an easy and convenient way to get in your greens. These powders are a great way to add more nutrients into your diet during busy times, travel, and transitions in life when you don't have time or have access to fresh veggies. If you're interested in trying Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens, head to myeq.com, that's myeq.com, and use code Dr. Yami, that's DRYAMI, for 15% off Equilibria's Daily Nutri-Greens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code DRYAMI at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice Bone-In Tender Ribeye Steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges of the rebrand that you faced?
I think just deciding to do it, because we are so obsessed with branding these days and having our niche and what, you know, whatever people have known us for, what we've developed a reputation for. And I was really scared, which is funny because there were a few people that asked me this directly, but I was really scared that with the rebrand, a lot of people would think that I'm rebranding because I'm no longer vegan. And I even had people say, like, Dr. Yami, if you stop being vegan, I don't even know what I would do with myself. I don't even know what I would think about the world. You know, like it's funny because like people see you as this entity of traits. And if you change, it affects them, you know, it's like cognitive dissonance, right? So when I did my goodbye episode, I made it very explicit that I'm not rebranding because I'm no longer vegan. This is not going to be, this is why I'm no longer vegan episode. It's just an expansion and, you know, just gives me the ability to bring in other topics comfortably. But I think that was the hardest thing is I really struggled with is it okay to do this? What's going to happen if I do this? Am I going to lose listeners? Are they going to be upset by it? Are people going to be receptive to it? And then once we made the decision to do it and we selected new cover art that was beautiful, I was like, all right, we're doing this and I'm going to go full force with it.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad that it's worked out for you. Clearly, it was the right decision to make given your intentions and how you want to move forward with the podcast. And on a separate note, how were you first able to make money or monetize or even earn revenue from I'm Human? I know it wasn't called that back then. And how has that progressed?
It's taken a long time. I was really resistant to advertising for a really long time. I don't know why. I mean, just I think we all have our own beliefs about it, you know, like if it's bad or those kinds of things. But it's really once you start getting 7 years in and you're paying for people to edit your podcast and you're paying for all these things, I think people don't realize how expensive it can get. Like you can start relatively inexpensive, which is wonderful. But when you advance and you evolve and you want better and better quality, it's really expensive. And so I basically had a super expensive hobby and probably still some people would consider it a very expensive hobby because I'm not making enough revenue to fully cover all the expenses just from the podcast. But I think I just had to get over that after a while. And, you know, there are certain ways that you can monetize a podcast and some of them I'm just not ready to do yet because I'm so busy with my practice. So we did start playing around a little bit with podcast sponsors on our own. And that was really fun, actually. And I really liked it. And I realized that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Like, I don't have to accept every single offer from a potential sponsorship, even though it doesn't align with my values. I can just pick and choose which ones would align and that's okay. And then I actually felt okay with that, especially with that practice. And then recently, around the time of the rebranding, we shifted to a podcast network that they specifically help with finding sponsors. And it's all very streamlined and I love it actually. And so for the first time ever, we're actually getting regular ad revenue. And then we also have passive ads on there as well. But the good thing is that you can also exclude certain genres. Like I don't want there to be alcohol that's advertised or tobacco or guns or any of those kinds of things. Cause I'm a pediatrician, right? And I'm in lifestyle medicine. So I feel like it would be like a conflict if I'm like talking about lifestyle stuff, but then there's also these passive ads for things that are not aligned with our values. And so I like that I was able to exclude certain genres of ads. And then the specific sponsors that are pitched to me, I can say yes or no. And I can just go with those that I feel align and would bring value to my audience as well. Like if I think, oh yeah, I feel like my listeners could actually benefit from this product, that this would actually help them lead a healthier lifestyle, then I say yes. And so now we're actually starting to bring in a little revenue and I'm hoping that grows over time, but you have to start somewhere. And I think that first thing is getting in that consistency and longevity. And once you get those download numbers up, then the companies start taking you more seriously as something that would also benefit them because it has to be a win-win situation. And as far as other things, like we advertise my book, which hasn't been a bestseller or anything. And so I don't get a lot of revenue from that. And we haven't gotten to the point yet where we've created any courses or, and I'm just too busy to actually do one-on-one coaching right now. So that probably would actually be the biggest source of generating revenue if I had the ability to do it. So that's something that we're looking forward to doing in the future when I have more time to dedicate to those avenues.
Yeah, that's cool that you have, you've explored all these channels. And I think the ads definitely can be placed in podcasts. I know that some people have that kind of like thought or belief out there, like, oh, maybe ads don't always belong in podcasts. I've definitely had some hosts that kind of like have expressed that feeling. But I would say that the data suggests otherwise and that listeners are quite receptive of host-read ads. And certainly, like you mentioned, when it's in line with like what you're teaching and what you're sharing, then you nailed it with the phrase win-win, really. And it's great that you have these ads coming in so easily. Now, when you first started out, before you had this ad network, How were you able to gain your first few sponsors?
Let me think. I feel like actually a few of them, they came to us directly. Yeah, they just came to us directly. And then we were like, yeah, let's do it. Or they would come and ask for more social media. And then we would create a package that included the podcast. And so that would be more value for them. And then that's how we started playing around with that.
Awesome. Well, that's perfect. I know as well, you've been a guest on a number of podcasts. What impact has that had on your show, your brand, and your business?
I think it helps quite a bit. As far as like my pediatric practice, I feel like I don't really get very many patients from my podcasting because I live in a really small town. And I feel like most people that age group aren't listening to podcasts, specifically not my podcast. So as far as number of patients, it hasn't really been affected that much by podcasting, but I have had, which is really interesting. So I live in a small town in Washington State, but the nearest big city that people would recognize is probably Seattle. And because I'm a plant-based pediatrician and there's just not very many of me, you know, there's not very many plant-based pediatricians. I have had patients come to me that drive all the way from the Seattle area or other surrounding cities to come to my practice because they did hear about me from the podcast, but that's just a small handful. So from other podcasts, I feel like I have gotten more listeners because a lot of the podcasts that interview me have to do with similar topics like plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine, that kind of thing. And so once they hear me on that podcast, then they start subscribing to my podcast. So that definitely has helped my podcast grow. And then just find me on social media. So I'll have DMs on social media like, hey, I heard you talk on so-and-so's podcast. I have a question. And so just increasing my follower count on social media. So as a speaker, it's just very easy for me to be a guest on other people's podcasts. It's very simple. It doesn't cost me anything. And so I think for people that are like that, that have a setup that they can easily do that, I think it's definitely worth your time because a lot of podcasts, they're going to stay available for years and years and years. So it's something that people could even find later. Like somebody could find me on an episode of this other podcast like 5 years from now. So it's just not a bad thing to do. I'd say if you have the opportunity to be on other people's podcasts, especially in similar genres, I would go for it.
Yeah, for the sake of longevity, it is fantastic. Like you said, I've spoken with many hosts and they say like episodes they published like 3 years ago still rack up listens on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And when I do speak with clients, I say like, this is a fantastic tool where you might not always see it right away. Like as soon as the episode gets published, you'll probably see a spike in attention to your Instagram or your social media or whatever, but this is going to continue trickling in. And it's unlike other forms of like marketing, maybe like ads, where once you stop paying, then it stops. So yeah, it's fantastic in that sense. How do you get yourself booked on these podcasts as a guest?
Okay. Well, honestly, going back to my first few sponsors, I don't do anything. They just ask me. I just wait and I just get invited. We had planned to try to get on more podcasts for a time, but it just ended up not being the best use of our time. So I just wait for people to invite me. And sometimes it'll just come in spurts where I'll get 3 or 4 invitations and then it'll be quiet for a while. And so I'm not focusing a lot of energy on specifically trying to get booked on podcasts right now, but it does happen regularly enough that I feel like it's enough for me right now.
Yeah. I mean, your size and your speciality of your knowledge, your credentials makes you like a really desirable guest. I mean, I know that I reached out to you and I was so pleased when you said yes. So it's fantastic that, you're open to these opportunities. And if you could go back in time, what strategies would you change or keep when it comes to the production of I Am Human, do you think?
Well, you have to learn as you go, right? I'm fine with knowing that I didn't know these things at the beginning, but just being more organized about things and developing that workflow from the beginning so that I didn't feel so scattered when I first started. Right now, like I said, we have it down to a science. The way that I write questions, send it to Alejandra, she puts them on a thing, it goes to my iPad, and, you know, record the episode, record the intro, get the one-liner ready, send it to the podcast editor. I mean, it's like a machine, you know, like we can crank out these episodes like so easy now, where in the past it felt like it took way more effort. But once you develop that workflow, it takes out so much effort. So that would be my number one recommendation, is write down every single thing you have to do for each episode and make a workflow and make a little, like at the beginning, I would even have like a little checklist. Until now, it's just like second nature. It's because we do it so often that we just know what to do now. But at the beginning, I would forget stuff like, oh man, I forgot to do that, or I didn't do that. Now I have to go back and do that, you know? And so once you get organized, it helps you a ton. And then I think the other thing is, as soon as you can, focus on good sound quality. And this was something that we didn't have a ton of control over at the very beginning. Now I have an office that has extra soundproofing and it's not echoey, and I have a nice microphone. And, you know, it can be a little bit more of an investment, but as soon as you can make that investment, it really helps, because now podcasts are becoming more popular. And when people listen to certain podcasts, if it sounds abrasive to their ears, they're going to stop listening. So make it so that it sounds pleasant for them and it's an enjoyable experience as soon as you can.
Yeah, I judge a podcast so quickly if I immediately hear it and the quality is bad, because I feel like there's too many podcasts out there to give your time to a podcast that really doesn't appreciate sound quality.
Yes.
Out of interest, what tools do you folks use, you and your team use, to simplify the process of creating your show?
Okay. Well, I have to say, I have used so many platforms for recording. And right now, I am such a fan of Riverside. I love Riverside. There's been very few glitches. And the ones that we've had, they've addressed, they've fixed, and, you know, they've just been really receptive. And they continue to make amazing upgrades. And I'm definitely not sponsored and I don't even do any affiliate or anything with them, but I really love it. And the reason I'm so passionate about it is because we went through so many bad recording platforms where, you know how it is, like you have the guest and then things cut out and then you lose this. It's like so stressful. And so I love having a platform where I feel like I can depend on and it does not create that stress. We're going to have a good recording and for both the audio and the video, and I can depend on it. So that's primarily the most important thing for us. And then let's see, we use Acuity for our scheduling, which if you have an interview type podcast and you book guests, I think it's really important to have some sort of a platform that is going to make it easier for everybody. I've definitely booked with some people where it was emails back and forth, and that's such a headache. And you know, we're just all strapped for time, especially me. I have like 50 million jobs I have to do. So really make it easier for yourself and your guests. Have a booking platform. And now they're so inexpensive and some are even free that you can start playing with. So we 100% depend on that. And then another thing that my employee, so my director of social media, we use Notion to organize ourselves. And so I think that's more advanced because, you know, if you're first starting out, you may not need something like this, but really it's just a platform that helps us with our project management and tasks and doing certain things. So we use that to kind of stay organized and on track with everything. I think that would be the main things. And of course, Dropbox, we use Dropbox a lot for our files.
That's pretty comprehensive. And I think these are all fantastic tools for like streamlining the process. We've obviously spoken about just like making things as smooth as possible. And I also kind of want to take things back to pitching in a sense, I suppose. I know you have guests on the show, and when you receive a pitch from someone wanting to be on I Am Human, what do you look for and what stands out for you when you get a pitch that you think, yeah, I want this person on?
This is a fantastic question. Thank you for asking this, because at this point, since we've been around for a while, we get so many pitches. That's actually an agenda item on our agenda for our meetings at least twice a week, every week that we have to go through pitches. And the number one thing I look for is to make sure that it's even aligned. So sometimes we get some pitches that have nothing to do with any of the topics that we talk about on my show. And I don't even know, why are they pitching? You know? So I think that's really important. Like, whenever a podcast host reads a pitch and we can tell that you have no clue what our show is about, you're not going to get a spot on the show, you know? So I think that's number one. Number two, I think the thing that's really irritating to me is when there's all these companies doing it, it sounds very generic and it sounds kind of fake. They'll be like, "We just love your show, I Am Human." And like saying things that you know is not even real because it's like this company that I know doesn't even listen to my show for real. So I think that one is kind of irritating because there's so many different companies pitching, which, you know, some people need help. So I think that's good. But knowing that for me is irritating. And then one thing that we have decided to not do as much of is guests that are specifically trying to sell a product. And the reason is just because of the type of show I have. So I did it for a little while just because sometimes I'm like super curious. And so sometimes there'd be like something that I'm actually just really curious about and I want to learn more about it, which is fine. But I started realizing that those podcast episodes just weren't as good because they tended not to be like comprehensive experts. They were more just wanting to sell their product. So it didn't give much value to my audience, even though initially I had been excited to talk to the guest. And so I'm looking more for people who are wanting to share value in the form of knowledge, something interesting, something exciting, and of course, things that are related to my genre, which is plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine. And of course, now that I'm branching out to spirituality and personal development, all that stuff counts too. But it has to be something that I know is going to be a good, fun interview that's going to provide value to my audience.
Yeah, I find this too. It's not just companies, but individuals. There is that. It's annoying when they do start off with something that seems very insincere, especially when they mention how much they love something or love your show, and but then there's no mention of personalization. There's no indication that they've actually ever listened to an episode. And we try and put out as much content as we can in the form of blogs, social media, podcast episodes to help people improve their pitches. Because I honestly feel like the more pitches out there that are of better quality, the easier it is for all of us. Because when there's so many bad pitches being sent, it really puts hosts off just even opening up their inbox. Oh, not opening up their inbox, but opening up these messages. Mm-hmm. And it's a real pity because there are a lot of people out there like myself. Like, I love my job. I love pitching. I love podcasting. I love working with clients. And I really put my all into it. And I know there are a lot of people out there that take a different approach where it's more kind of spray and pray, throw enough at the wall and something will stick, rather than a quality focus. And those people and that approach just makes it so much harder for the rest of us, which are really trying to take a quality approach to pitching. So yeah, I think that's really important to acknowledge. And I did want to ask as my final question to you, what do you think it takes to create a successful podcast?
Enthusiasm and patience. So I think you have to be excited to do it. You have to be into it. You have to be willing to try new things. And I will say patience is not my strongest suit for sure, but I've learned how to be patient and how to roll with the punches and just hang in there and keep going and try new things. So I don't think you definitely don't have to be, because I have never been. You don't have to be perfect from the beginning. You can learn as you go and just tweak things and improve as you go, but just get in there and do it. I know a lot of people want to start a podcast. They've been thinking about starting a podcast forever and ever and ever. Just do it. Just start. And even if you can just be like me and have one episode a month, that's fine. You can increase it as you go, as you get the hang of it, you develop your systems. But I say, if you are ready to do a podcast and it's a desire that you have in your heart and your soul, go for it.
I think that's a wonderful pep talk for anyone that's thinking of starting a podcast. And you're also a shining inspiration for anyone that's maybe even a year in, 2 years in, 3 years in, to show that, like, yeah, persistency really pays off. And if people are listening and they want to keep up with the work that you're doing, Dr. Yami, how can they do that?
So you can find me on most social media platforms at the Dr. Yami. And my show is now called I Am Human, but you can still search it under Veggie Doctor Radio. So you can find it both ways. And my website is dryami.com.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Yami. And yes, please go check out I'm Human. Find it on your podcast platforms. Leave it a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to it. And it's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.